And if you have based your whole personality, your whole life plan, your whole business plan on being just like somebody else or trying to outcompete or compete against somebody else, you are going to hit that breaking point because you can only mimic so far. To the Fast Forward Podcast. We are continuing our conversation about hope. And again, as I shared in the intro to this month, I really want to frame our conversation about hope around models of change, because hope in and of itself is about expecting a future outcome, moving toward a future goal, which is change and requires change management. So y'all know I got to sprinkle a little OD magic in this, and there are a ton of change models. So let me say that I'm picking out four to talk about this month. But there are at least 14 that I describe in my book alone, and there are more beyond that. And if you haven't grabbed my book, it's called Evolution to Equity. There should be a link in the description for you to purchase. Is going to tell more about change management and specifically about how to create a company that people both love to work for and buy from, which is super important. So let's get back to talking about hope. Hope for me is a requirement. I don't care how difficult things are, how dark it is, how unreasonable the transition has been, you have to have hope. There's no way that you're going to be able to make it, especially as an entrepreneur and a senior leader. It's just not going to be able to happen. And sometimes, you know, we expect to hope for huge things. But sometimes your hope might just be like a little something. I hope, and my goal is to be able to do the dishes this week. Anybody who has been in the throes of depression or a depressive episode, you know, sometimes that can feel like a monumental task. But whatever the size of your hope is, it is equally as valid. I want to start by talking about action research. This is a model. This is actually one that I used quite a bit even in undergrad to think about the research projects that I conducted in Ghana and South Africa. And I like the action research model because it is geared toward involving voices. So the main goal or the foundational principle of action research that we could consider is collaboration. You are required to engage with others, to gather perspectives, to invite challenges, to invite competing perspectives. And I like that because sometimes we hope for something that quite honestly is too small. And by engaging with other people, they can push us. I call them my sandpaper people, but they can push us and challenge us. And we're like, you know what? Okay, I'm gonna think of this thing instead. That has happened to me a lot in business. So I'll take the Synapse Institute, for example. When I first created the Synapse Institute, I had a very specific goal for what I wanted it to accomplish. And I was like, okay, I'm going to design this school, build it up, and it's going to look good to this particular type of customer. And I stood it up, launched it, and nobody bid. And so I was like, okay, where the customers at though? Like, where the money? I quickly realized that I was thinking too small. And in having conversations with other people and them giving me advice or talking to me, even without knowing they were giving me advice on that, but just talking to me about the value that I provide, I realized I could be doing something different with this. The dopest part about this, and this relates back to action research, is that action research doesn't suppose that you come into the model or come into the environment without a hypothesis or some foundational thought. So this is not just open field day thinking anything. You come in with a thought, but you are open to, again, engaging voices, bringing in agreement, challenges, new perspectives that then allow you to test new hypotheses and refine your hypotheses and refine your ideas. And that is so important with hope because, remember, I mentioned in the intro for this month that you aren't just the only person or thing that's changing. The world is also changing around us. And with the world changing around us, we have to be dynamic. We have to be open. We have to be willing to navigate the waters in such a way that we don't lose ourselves, but we also don't lose the possibility of progress. Because no matter how much I wanted the Synapse Institute to work out in this one particular way, it just was not going to work, period. Like, it wasn't going to work for that right then, because the landscape was changing so much. And because I was willing to listen, even again, it was like breadcrumbs with different people. And then finally I prayed about it, and I felt that I had an opportunity to reframe this foundation to be something that could be much more sustainable, lucrative, and honestly, that would free me up to do more over time. I had never considered that before. So here are the steps to the model. And you're going to see me looking over here because I took notes, of course. Again, the main win of the action research model is collaboration. And so there are five major phases of this, and that is to first diagnose, and I could even call that hypothesizing. Then you want to plan, take action, third, evaluate, and then reflect. So this is important because when we are involving other people, it is very easy to experience scope creep, vision creep, mission creep. Because when you are hearing from other people, you start veering off even just a little bit. So coming into it with that diagnosis of here's what I believe, here's what I want to accomplish, it helps you to not go off center too much. Now, sometimes you might end up changing the goal after so many iterations. But if you have appropriately designed the target for your hope, one person's opinion shouldn't throw you off your square that much that fast. And I like the action research model because it requires that deep reflection, the pondering, again, processing of different opinions, chewing on things that is needed, because you will find that you need to eat the meat and spit out the bone. So every opinion is not equally as valid. And I also want to say this, I think I take for granted because I do so much research. Everybody does not recognize that you do not have to take the whole of someone else's argument. So one of the things that I love about grad school in particular is that when we're working on capstone papers, dissertations, theses, etc., you have to do something called a literature review. And with a literature review, you are reviewing literature that is not just about your topic, but it's also reviewing things about your methodology. It could be reviewing things from your foundational framework that you're using to measure. Any little part of your research is included in that literature review. And I love that, because I'll just take my dissertation, for example. When I first started the program, it's been a long time, child, but when I first started the PhD program, there was almost no scientific research about my topic. And so when I was looking for articles to review in my literature review, I didn't have the chance to say, oh, this person already researched this and here's what they found. Instead, I had to say, oh, here are examples of someone who used the same methodology I'm considering. Here's what I like about that. Here's what I don't think would be helpful. Here is the way they presented their information. I didn't consider that. I think that that could be helpful to me, or I don't think it would be a fit for that audience. Again, I think we take for granted how powerful that can be, because I don't have to like someone's hope. I don't have to like someone's goal. I don't have to share goals with them. I don't have to share hopes with them. I might just like the way that they do things. And I find that a lot with people. So in particular with celebrities, this will be a good exercise for you. Instead of allowing yourself to just be wholly influenced where, okay, so-and-so is wearing this outfit, I'm gonna wear that exact outfit. No, do I like the fact that they're wearing a bright color that seems to complement their skin tone? Okay, that's one piece out of maybe 11 parts to their look or to this reel or this, you know, Instagram story or article that they put out. I just like this part. If there is a writer that you love, instead of saying, okay, I'm going to mimic their writing style, try saying, I love the fact that they use allegory. I love the fact that they use alliteration. I love that alone was alliteration too, a little bit. I like the fact that they do a great job at personifying environments. So instead of just talking about people and making people a main character, maybe they make the city the main character, or the weather a main character. again, you can take out the pieces. And I really believe that that helps to inspire our hope as well, because sometimes when we get so caught up in trying to follow people, you can't completely follow somebody because you're a different person. And so everybody is going to hit that stop point to where they can only mimic so far. And if you have based your whole personality, your whole life plan, your whole career plan, your whole goal, your whole business plan on being just like somebody else or trying to out-compete or compete against somebody else, you are going to hit that breaking point because you can only mimic so far. And the pursuit of growth leveraging hope. So again, we're taking hope to get to somewhere. The pursuit of that growth should be centered on the best of what you can accomplish, not what you can do better than somebody else. Because again, you might be coming up with something that doesn't exist. I feel that way about my company. I feel that way about what I'm doing. What I'm trying to accomplish in this world, I don't think that anybody else in the world has ever done it like this. Now, this could just be my little arrogance thinking I'm, you know, the stuff. I don't know. But I am convinced that what I got going on, you can't touch it. But I still find inspiration from seeing other people. And then I'm requiring myself to take stock, reflect, sit with it, chew on it, extract and distill out the parts I want to use, and then keep it pushing. That keeps me honest to myself. A couple other points I wanted to make with this. So there are actually three types of action research. There is operational, or what's considered technical action research, collaboration action research, and then critical reflection or retroactive research. Again, I'll trust y'all to go look up the definitions for each of those three. But the one I really want to talk about is critical reflection or retroactive. And I think that this is important because, especially when you are the first in your family to do something, I think, and I feel like this, especially for my generation, for us millennials, who now, again, we in middle age, we have become addicted to feeling like we are fighting the power, that nobody else is done, nobody else can help us, nobody helped us get what we are. And we don't realize that, yeah, you might be the first person to do what you're doing in whole in your family, but there are parts of your family's genealogy and history that you are reconciling and repeating. So here's how that shows up in my own life. I am one of the first entrepreneurs in my family. When I finish this degree, I will be the first person to get a PhD in my family. I probably am the second, maybe the third person in my family to have gone up the career ladder as high as I did when I worked in house. I say that to say the air is quite thin in what I'm doing and accomplishing. And there are other accomplishments where it's very rare, or if at all, someone has done this. With that being said, I still recognize that the principles that led me to do what it is that I'm doing are a reflection of the generational blessings that I carry. So while my grandmothers, both paternal and maternal, never started a business and became entrepreneurs, their pursuit of excellence in their career, I believe I inherited. So when I think about how my uncle describes the way my paternal grandmother was awesome at what she did and well respected and commanded a room and commanded the respect of her employers, I'm like, yeah, I see myself in that. That's me. My grandmother's pursuit of professional development and continuous improvement. I remember her telling me when I was a kid, we would just talk all the time. I told y'all my grandma raised me. And so she shared with me that she went and got cooking certificates in international culinary arts. So I think she said she got a certificate in being able to cook Chinese food. And it was two or three other cultures' food that she went and took classes to learn and got paperwork to learn how to do it, to master and become proficient in that. I carry that, right? And so again, even though their work and their proclivity for improvement and proclivity toward excellence was applied in a different way, the spirit of that, the heart of that, that principle and that trait, I have that too. And I think that that critical reflection or retroactive action research will help you distill down not the generational curses you carry, because a lot of us are aware of those, but to know those generational blessings too. I discovered about my father before he passed, and we actually got a chance to talk about it, that he loved to cook too. And I had kind of heard that, even about the arts. I had heard that he used to write songs and folks would encourage him to go to Motown and submit stuff, because y'all know I'm from Detroit. So this was back when you could just go up to Motown and be talking about you got some songs to write and hope they'll put you on. And I got to talk to him about that. And he did love cooking. Apparently, he cooked in the military. And that was part of his job, if not his, I think it was his whole job in Vietnam. And he worked as a caterer at one point and just things like that. And that was so interesting to me because I love to cook. And that's an outlet for me and that creativity and what that does for me. And he was giving me recipes for some things. And I realized that I'm not on an island as much as I thought I was. Again, no, other people might not be entrepreneurs necessarily, but that doesn't mean that I don't carry a part of them. And that retroactive action research, even just on your own family, I think is going to be pivotal. The other place where action research is going to be really important, and this is especially true for senior leaders who work in legacy organizations that have been around for a long, long time, whether it's government, private sector, or even now, you might be tech startups that's been around for a long time. Every past action or plan or accomplishment is not meant to be dismissed. So we love to break things and, oh, we need to change this. No, sometimes that didn't work for a reason. Like sometimes they tried that, couldn't get it done, and that need to teach you something, because you probably shouldn't be doing that too. And the arrogance I think sometimes we carry into change, that can destroy our hope too. Because sometimes we make things way too difficult in the pursuit of feeling smart or feeling like we better than the people who couldn't get it done before. So I would encourage you that when you are thinking about, again, how you want to move forward, so we are hoping for the future, it's okay to reflect backward a little bit and get perspectives. Talk to people. Again, the point of action research is collaboration. Talk to people. Find out what worked, what didn't work. And not just for the final outcome, it could be the methodology, the communication standards, how you showed up, if you put things in writing versus having verbal conversations, how you sequence steps, what external influences you allow yourself to be influenced by, who you talk to from the ecosystem that's outside the organization. All of those things are important to the story as well. So that's what I got for action research. Let me know down in the comments, have you ever applied this model? Do you have any experience in it, either in work or in your personal life? And if so, what did that do for you? How did you find that shifted your ability to hope for and navigate change? Let me know down in the comments. And also, what are some generational blessings that you could conduct some action research on and reflect and grab those nuggets and apply forward? Let me know down in the comments. And of course, be sure to like, share, and subscribe. And I'm going to catch you in the next one. Bye.